Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, we're along with Pastor William Fink, and we're going to have another installment of Christogenos. And we've been doing a series on the Gospel of John, which is, you know, for most critics and scholars, it's considered to be the most "quote unquote" anti-Semitic of all the Gospels, because the fact is, ladies and gentlemen, that Yahshua Messiah has nothing good to say about the Jewish people anywhere, and because the Jewish people are the relatives of the rabbis, those Edomites and Canaanites that came out of Idumea, and are not at all the kinsmen of the Israelites or the Judahites. So we in identity understand that. Very, very few other people in the world understand that. However, this knowledge is being spread far and wide. You just take a look on the internet, and more and more people are identifying the Jews as Edomites and Canaanites. Praise Yahweh for that, okay? So in this, we're going to start with John 7:51. I think we finished up through 53 last time, but this is an important verse here. John 7:51. Does our law judge any man before it hear him and know what he does? So we are not to prejudge anybody. And I know that there's that's been happening to me in my life, with accusations being slurred around the internet about my supposed Portuguese Jewish ancestors. Okay. And if anybody has proof of that allegation, this verse says you must prove it. You must confront me with it personally. If you've got evidence that I'm a Portuguese Jew, then please show me what evidence you have.
Let me just make a small interjection.
Okay, sure.
Paul says, and I know it's mistranslated in the King James, and in my translation, Paul basically says in Timothy that one must not accuse an elder public except one must not accuse an elder or accept an accusation against an elder except publicly with two or three witnesses.
Right, right, yes.
So you don't accuse an elder unless you have two or three witnesses. It's two or three pieces of evidence.
Right. And obviously these people, Athena being one of them, they have no evidence.
Well, they're blasphemers in many ways.
Right.
You know, she spouts many blasphemies.
Right. And she's gotten several other people to repeat that accusation. Of course, you know, there's too much of this going on, and where accusations are flying, and, you know, we have to obey the law. You know, and that's the bottom line, and that's what this verse is talking about, 7:51. We have to obey the law. The way the law works, folks, is that if you don't like what somebody's doing, and this is only applying to Israelites. It doesn't apply to people of other races. They shouldn't be in our company anyway, as the ongoing hysteria around Haiti is proving. You know, we shouldn't be involving ourselves in the affairs of other races. It just makes our race, succumb to their prejudices and their religions, as the Bible tells us numerous times, absolutely numerous times. And so if you have a problem with somebody in Israel, you take it to that person directly, to that person's face. And if that person doesn't satisfy you, then you get a witness, you get a second witness. Then the two of you go to that person, and if you still don't get satisfaction, then you make it public. That's how it works in Israel, okay? So those people who are making accusations against me, against anybody else in Israel, if you do not follow this law, you are guilty of the same accusation, and the punishment will be double for the false accusation. Okay, that's the law in Israel. Okay, verse 52. They answered and said to him, "Are you also of Galilee? Search and look, for out of Galilee arises no prophet." Okay, well, these people didn't realize that the Galileans were Benjamites, and there would be a great light coming out of Benjamin. Okay, and he would be called the Nazarene. Verse 53, and every man went to his own house. And of course, chapter 7 is all about the confrontations between the pro-Yahshua faction in Judea and the anti-Yahshua faction in Judea. And the anti-Yahshua faction is always led by these Edomite Jews. That's what we have to understand, okay? No, getting into chapter 8. Oh, you said you had some comment before
we get into... Well, right. I like to make the comments before we start, because when you ask me what a certain verse says in chapter 8, I'm going to have to read the Greek. I don't have it in my translation.
Okay.
And chapter 8 through verses from 753 to 811 are not in my translation.
Right.
I do not translate them because they're not in almost all of the oldest manuscripts.
Mm-hmm.
These verses are in the Codex Bazai. Well, which dates to the 5th century, and which did affect the Textus, you know, the Textus Receptus, or the text that the King James and other Bibles are based on. But they are not in the Codices Sinaiticus, Alexandrinus, Vaticanus, Ephraim Syri, or Washingtonensis, which are all 4th and 5th century manuscripts.
Okay.
All right. All the major great uncials except the Bazai do not have this passage.
Okay.
Now, some manuscripts, late medieval manuscripts, also attempted to interject almost this identical story into one of several places in the Gospel of Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, into chapter 21 and chapter 24, I think, or chapter 23.
Okay.
It's a couple of places in Luke that in late manuscripts that have this interpolation also.
Okay.
But nobody accepts them in Luke.
Okay.
Most Bibles have them in John because they're in the Codex Bazai.
Okay.
But they're not in the circa 200 A.D. papyri number 66,
mm-hmm.
okay, and which goes right from 752 to 812.
Okay.
The verses, there were no verse divisions in the original papyri.
Right, exactly.
And they are not in the 3rd century papyri known as papyri 75. They are also not in the oldest Syriac manuscripts and the oldest extant Latin manuscripts.
Yeah, yeah.
They're only in the Codex Bazai.
Okay.
And for that reason, I know a lot of people like this cute little story
mm-hmm.
about Yahshua, you know, writing in the dirt
right.
and saying he who was out sin throw
yes.
the first. But it's just not in the oldest manuscripts, so I omit it.
Yeah, okay. So that's why it's not in your translation.
Right.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of disputation whether it belongs in the scriptures. I don't have that much of a problem with it because it, as written, it doesn't contradict anything.
No, I think it kind of tries to redefine adultery maybe from a Hebrew perspective, but not from a Greek perspective.
So I
really don't have a problem with it either.
Yeah.
Knowing
yeah.
that the Greek idea of adultery was different from the Old Testament.
Okay, okay. And it does not in any way suggest that the law has been abolished. It actually confirms the law. So those people who have abused it, whether it's original or not, those people who have abused it are of the same category of distortionists of the Paul Bashers and the antinomians, et cetera, that were, you know, the familiar cast of characters.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've seen I've even seen identity pastors think they had some great revelation and were able to determine what Yahshua wrote in the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And they've made up huge, you know, stories about this. Well, maybe they didn't make them, you know, fabricate them totally, but it's basically these verses. I don't believe they belong in a scripture. They're only in one codex from the 5th century.
Okay, okay. All right, well, very good. Anything else before we get into 8?
I mean, no, you're welcome to read through 8:11. I'm not going to protest, but
yeah, right.
I don't have I could look at the Greek, but
yeah.
it's basically the King James translation of the text of the Codex Bazai is a fair translation.
Uh-huh. Right. Okay, very good. And, but I would like to read through it because to show that it does not in any way suggest that the law has been abolished, which is the common myth around it. Yes, okay. Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. And early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. And the scribes and Pharisees brought to him a woman taken in adultery, and when they had set her in the midst, they say to him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned, but what say you? Okay, now, of course, what could he say? Because no trial. No trial has been done. Okay. So, and he's not a witness. Okay. So let's continue. This, they said, tempting him. Okay. They want to trip him up that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground as though he heard them not. Okay, so he basically ignored what they were saying, and he just stooped down and started writing something in the sand. So when they continued asking him, he lifted up himself and said to them, "He that is without sin among you, let him cast a stone at her." Okay, so number one, whoever casts a stone has to be sinless, okay? So that excludes everybody, right? Verse 8, "And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground, and they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even to the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst." Now, I believe, I have no proof of this, but it seems logical for me to suggest that what he was actually writing in the sand was the names of her accusers, okay, the ones that had been fornicating with her, right, okay? So, of course, they couldn't be, if they accused her, they would actually be guilty themselves, okay? You know, that's just a supposition on my part. Now, here...
Well, right, and a lot of other writers in Identity have made that supposition, or similar ones.
Yes, okay, very good. And verse 10, "When Jesus had lifted himself and saw none but the woman..." So it's just him and her standing there. "He said to her, 'Woman, where are those your accusers? Has no man condemned you?' She said, 'No man, Lord.' And Jesus said to her, 'Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more.'" Now the antinomians stop at "neither do I condemn you." Right?
Well, yeah, they do.
Right? And then they forget that he says, "Go and sin no more."
Right, and it's a good story. I'm not going to, you know, it's a great story, and a lot of people love it.
Yeah.
And they're like, "What, are you crazy? Why do you leave that out?"
Uh-huh.
And I can't break my, my ethic tells me that the verses that don't have the oldest manuscript evidence don't belong in my translation.
Right, right.
And even if I love this story, I can't have it in there.
Right. Now, and the same thing applies to what we were discussing regarding John 7:51 about the law judging any man. You have to have a formal trial. You have to have a formal trial. Otherwise, no one could be judged. No one can be stoned. And of course, these people, you know, they weren't in agreement with giving this woman a trial. They wanted to stone her right then and there.
Well, right. That's what they
do.
That's why they're the false accuser. That's,
right.
That's They do it all the time. They do it in the streets of our major cities every day.
Right. And so,
look at the things the ARA does.
That's right. That's right. And so what Jesus did in this case was he prevented the lynching from happening. Everything he did was perfectly in accord with the law. Okay. So this whole story is perfectly lawful, you know, whether it's, you know, it's original or not. Okay. So verse 12, "Then spoke Jesus again to them, saying, 'I am the light of the world. He that follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life.'" Again, you know, we emphasized last time the difference between the gospel of life and the covenant of death. Verse 13.
Well, if you don't know the truth about the world, you're just stumbling around in the dark.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. The blind leader.
All these mainstream Christians, they're just stumbling around in the dark.
Yes.
And the devil's helping them get through it, you know.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, and Guest 8 says all Bibles have notes that says what was added. Nobody accepts that as
well. That's in Bibles with notes. Not all Bibles
right.
have
yeah,
notes.
Yeah, right. The Bibles that have the notes, exactly. Yes. Okay. Verse 13. "The Pharisees therefore said to him, 'You bear record of yourself. Your record is not true.'" So they're accusing Yahshua of being a liar. Verse 14. "Jesus answered and said to them, 'Though I bear record of myself, yet my record is true. For I know from where I came and where I go, but you cannot tell from where I come and where I go. You judge after the flesh. I judge no man.'" Okay, so after the flesh, what is he meaning here?
Well, in accordance with the desires of the flesh or the fleshly. I mean, you might see somebody beating somebody,
mm-hmm.
and right away you want to go get that guy and wring his neck.
Right.
Because he's beating up this
yeah.
other person. And you don't know that this other person just raped the guy's wife.
Yes.
That, you
yes.
know, I mean, you're judging after the flesh. You got to find out the whole story and judge fairly.
Right.
And you know,
yeah.
There's
yeah.
a big difference.
You
and that's an extreme example, but
sure.
that's what the Pharisees did. They judged after the flesh. They,
right.
they judge on
yes.
sight. He healed a man on the Sabbath, so he's guilty of violating the Sabbath.
Right, yeah. It's like the law. They are the law in themselves, and whatever they decided on the spot, that's the law.
Right.
That's Pharisaism. Right. Verse 16, And yet if I judge, my judgment is true, for I am not alone, but I and the Father that sent me. So Yahweh and Yahshua are a team against these Pharisees. Verse 17.
Well, right, and let me say, he condemned no one, not I judge
no
one.
Oh, okay.
And it's really in the sense of condemning them.
Very good.
All right, and that's true of his first advent.
Mm-hmm.
In his second advent, he's going to condemn everybody.
That's right. Oh, yeah, it's going to be big-time condemnation, judgment of the entire world. Yes, okay. Verse 17, now, let me just read it as it's written here in the King James. It is also written in your law that the testimony of two men is true, referring back to Deuteronomy 19:15.
Right, and that's what it does say, your law there.
Yes, yeah. So now when he says your, he can't, you know, since it's Deuteronomy 19:15, he's recognizing that these Pharisees do have the Hebrew scriptures in their possession.
Well, and at least some of them are true Hebrew. At least some of them
are. Some
of them
are, yes. Yes. Yeah, okay, so he's addressing them collectively.
Right, we can't assume that they're all Edomites.
Right, very good.
But the ones that are following the Edomites, you know, they're, if you're following the Jews, you're just basically a Jew. I mean, you've made yourself a Jew.
And it is true that the Talmud incorporates the Torah.
Yes,
so,
it is.
So the Torah is in the Talmud. So
right, but at this point, there's really no Talmud. It's just an oral law. They give lip service to the Bible.
Exactly.
They follow this that this oral, they call it an oral law, but it's really just a suite of traditions that they that are bendable and pliable into the situation. It's situational ethics is what it is.
Right. And it always favors the rabbis.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the rabbis can't lose with the situation. Right. Verse 19, then said they to him, where is your father? Jesus said, you neither know me nor my father. If you had known me, you should have known my Father also. So,
now, let me say that, I would say that he said this because he is the Father in reality.
Okay.
And we saw that last week in a certain other verse where he said that basically the same thing. If
mm-hmm.
you've seen me, you've seen the Father.
Yeah.
But I would say that both of these verbs here for the word known mm-hmm. are pluperfect. And the pluperfect means the perfect indicative of past time. In other words, it's not that they haven't known him so they can't know the Father, or they haven't known him but they could get to know him. You know, mm-hmm. they already have not known him.
Right.
In other words, they didn't know him from the beginning, and they can't know him.
Okay,
basically, that's what the use of the pluperfect indicates to me.
Okay, so in other words, they could never know.
Yeah, right. They could never know.
Yahweh, Yahshua in any way, shape, or form because they are satanic seed line. Certainly the Edomites are. Yes. Okay, verse 20. These words spoke Jesus in the treasury as he taught in the temple, and no man laid hands on him, for his hour was not yet come. Okay, so the timing of Yahweh in this situation is absolutely critical. Verse 21. Then said Jesus again to them, I go my way, and you shall seek me, and shall die in your sins. Where I go, you cannot come. Again, he's talking to the Pharisees. Now, of course, let's analyze this for a second here, because we understand that this political sect, which was also the ruling priesthood in Judea at this time, was a combination of Judahites who were following Edomites. Okay, so it's Edomites and Judahites, kind of like our Republican Party and Democratic Party today. It's a combination of Jews and Adamites, right?
Right, okay. Except in the ancient world, they also happen to be priests.
Right, exactly. Now, who's leading the other by the nose today?
Well, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely true that the children of the devil are leading the children of God who hold offices and positions of authority around by the nose.
Yes, we've allowed. Yes.
The same patterns in history repeat themselves, there's no doubt.
Yeah, so I mean, this is how we're to understand what's going on here. Those Judahites who are deceived and are following the teachings of the rabbinical Edomites are, you know, they're obviously just as deluded in this time as the Christian Zionists are today, folks. It's exactly the same situation. Verse 22. Then said the Jews, will he kill himself?
well, let me say about 20 real quick.
Okay.
Or I'm sorry, about 21 real quick. That
yeah.
You know, even the Edomites would die in their error or in their sin.
Yeah.
And if sin is transgression of the law, the Edomites were born in it.
Right.
And they have no choice but to die in it.
Right. Right. And that's why they don't believe in the afterlife. Because
well,
they don't have spirits that survive this, survive death. Yes. Verse 22 then. Then said the Jews, will he kill himself? Because he says, where I go, you cannot come. And, of course, this shows that their utter lack of spiritual concept of what's going on here. And verse 23, and he said to them, you are from beneath.
Says, you are from those below.
Those below.
In other words, it's not just them personally,
mm-hmm.
but there's a group of those who are from below.
Yeah.
And they are of that group.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, this is all predetermined.
Yeah.
This is they're not from beneath because they're bad people and they don't believe him. That they're from beneath, so they don't believe him, and they're bad people.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Well, this could also be a reference to those Nephilim that are being kept in Tartarus.
Well, yes, absolutely. And,
yeah.
And that's even Peter, you know, his little epistle professes that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Exactly. So you are from those beneath, I am from above, you are of this world, and of course Satan is the prince of this world, and I am not of this world. Okay, so now typically this, modern day Judeo-Christians take this as meaning, well, I'm not a materialistic person, I'm a spiritual person, is what they say here. But what's the true meaning here of verse 23?
Well, they're from this society. This society made its own laws.
Mm-hmm.
And this society is often in violation of Yahweh's law.
That's right.
And they were, they originated in this society. They did not originate in his society.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, he doesn't belong to their society, and they don't belong to his society. It's two different
no.
worlds.
Yahweh's not going to, he's not going to take credit for a bastard.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's what it boils down to. He's not going to take credit for a rebel or a
mm-hmm.
bastard.
A rebel order of hybrid races. Yes, he's not going to take credit for that. Of course not. Yes, and that he is from above, and you rabbis are of this world, this evil world, and I'm not of this evil world. Okay, and he has come to ultimately judge this evil world. Okay, verse 24. I said, therefore, to you that you shall die in your sins, for if you believe not that I am he, you shall die in your sins. Okay, so now, isn't it true that the Jews today still do not accept Yahshua as the Messiah?
No, and it's not possible for them to accept it.
Right.
And even the ones that have been converted over the years, they're scions, their offspring don't accept it.
Right.
I mean, look at John Hagee.
Yeah, right. He is one of their offspring, isn't he?
He has to be. I'm sorry. He has to be. He has to have descended from crypto Jews. I can't believe that he could be a true Israelite just stand there and claim to be. Yeah, you know, if you're an atheist, you're an atheist. You're raised that way, you're raised that way.
Yeah.
But he has no excuse.
Right, right. And he certainly has the scriptures on his table, too.
and claims to be a master of them. And still denies that Yahshua is the Christ.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yes. Okay. So there's a clear condemnation here that the rabbis of Judaism are not acceptable. They're not acceptable in the kingdom, and they're not acceptable in the real world. Of course, we're living in the world of, how did Paul put it, the world of in the world of politics, in any case, the Jews rule that world, and wherever they are, they are always trying to rule that world.
And we're going to talk about that when I talk about Judas Skepter a little in a
yes.
couple of
okay.
verses.
Okay, all right, very good.
But basically, he's saying if you don't believe who I am, he's not trying to persuade them of who he is.
Right.
He's just saying if you don't believe it, you're going to die in your errors.
That's right.
And that's because they were born in their errors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Verse 25, then said they to him, who are you? And Jesus says to them, even the same that I said to you from the beginning.
Now, I would say that from the beginning is the beginning of this conversation.
Okay.
And he said, I am the light of the society.
Oh, okay. Right. Very good. And actually, in that sense, if we're talking about the Judeo, how should I put it? The Judahite Benjamite world, okay, that he is the light of the Judahite slash Benjamite world, then that would be a totally accurate statement, okay? And those people, the Edomites and those Judahites and Benjamites who went to the other side, would no longer be part of that world.
Well, no, they've sold themselves out.
Yeah, right. It would be sellouts and traitors. Yes, to the Edomites. Exactly. Okay, verse 26. I have many things to say and to judge of you, but he that sent me is true, and I speak to the world those things which I have heard of him. They understood not that he spoke to them of the Father. Okay? These Jews, they don't know the Father. They don't know the Messiah. They don't know the Father. I mean, this is plain as day, folks. You can't get this wrong. It's so obvious what he's telling these people. And, you know, but here's how the Judeo-Christians deceive Christians about these verses today, is they pretend that these Pharisees here don't have rabbinical descendants, you know, who are actually teaching the same doctrine today. These Jews are teaching the same doctrine today that the Pharisees taught in those days.
Well, they're teaching exactly the same doctrine.
Yes.
And it's a direct line. It's a direct line of descent.
Right. And for those people who don't want to believe me, I'm going to quote, and this is my favorite quote about the Jews, about the rabbis. According to the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 8, 1942, page 474, quote, "The Jewish religion, as it is today, traces its descent without a break through all the centuries from the Pharisees. Their leading ideas and methods found expression in a literature of enormous extent, of which a very great deal is still in existence. The Talmud is the largest and most important single member of that literature." So here you go, folks. The Jews totally admitting that Judaism is Pharisaism. And in fact, they are more evil today than they were in those days because they've had 2,000 years to perfect their deceptive arts. Okay, so verse 28. "Then said Jesus to them, when you have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall you know that I am he, and that I do nothing of myself, but as my Father has taught me, I speak these things." So he's telling them, these Pharisees, that they're going to lift him up, of course, on that cross. Verse 29.
Well, they wouldn't know him until they crucified him.
Right.
And
right.
Even the, you know, even the Edomites, even the Jews, the enemies of Christ, they knew what happened after he arose from the dead.
Yes.
They knew that that they were in deep doggy do, and they better cut
right.
Their
track. Yeah, they began to realize what was going on. Right. And they bribed the guards to try
right.
to get them to lie about what they saw.
They know what happened.
Yes.
There's no doubt they know what happened.
Uh-huh.
And that's why they wrote all those horrible things about him in the Talmud.
Right. That's
they
right.
had to write those things.
Yeah, he's the son of a whore. Mary
right.
was a whore, and some Roman soldier was his real father. That's what
they teach him. And they know they're trying to defend themselves from the wrath of God.
Mm-hmm.
And they know they're trying to exterminate. And most of them don't know it consciously, but their rabbis sure know it.
Right. That's right. And they follow their rabbis, whatever their rabbis tell them to do. Okay.
Well, right. And mm-hmm. and that's, you know, those children of Cain that did what their father told them to do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and the Christians don't do what their father told them to do.
That's right. That's right.
They're okay. trying to go off and follow the obedient children of Cain.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Verse 29, "And he that sent me is with me. The Father has not left me alone, for I do always those things that please him." It's very obvious what's going on here. Is that Yahshua is telling us that these Jews, these Edomites, these scribes and Pharisees, don't know Yahweh. They simply do not, and they have no connection with Yahweh whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
Yeah.
He totally disassociates them from himself and explains perfectly that there was no possibility at all for them ever to be on his side.
That's right. They are not his sheep, as he says elsewhere, yes.
Well, right, we're going to get to that maybe
yeah.
next week. Or...
And it, to me, it's just incredible that the mainstream Christian world simply ignores these profound statements.
Because they don't read John past 3:16.
Yeah, right, or before 3:16 either, right?
Well, right.
Okay, verse 30, as he spoke these words, many believed on him. So there were many Judahites and Benjamites here who understood that, hey, there's something wrong with these scribes and Pharisees.
Right.
Okay, verse 31. Then now today, we in Christian Identity apparently are the only ones who understand that there's something wrong with these scribes and Pharisees, right? Verse 31, then said Jesus to those Judahites, in this case, which believed on him, if you continue in my word, then are you my disciples indeed. Of course, he would not accept an Edomite Jew as a disciple. He just told them there's no way you can be, so that the word Jew here has to apply to Judahites exclusively. Okay, verse 32, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Okay, now, of course, he was addressing Judahites here because, let's just keep reading. And they answered him, we be Abraham's seed. Now, these are the scribes and Pharisees answering, and were never in bondage to any man. How say you, you shall be made free? Okay, now we want to discuss this at length.
Yeah, yes, we will. First, real quick, though,
mm-hmm.
somebody in the forum brought up that Bullinger reads verse 31, therefore Yahshua said to those Judeans who believed him not, mm-hmm. if you abide in my word, you are truly my students. And I don't know the Bullinger translation, but mm-hmm. I have to say, I just checked out the NA27, and according to the NA, the Nestle Aland Novum Testamentum Grece, and according to that, which is quite an authority on the variant readings of the Greek,
uh-huh.
there's no major manuscripts that have a negative particle.
That have the word not in there. Yeah, I've never heard that before.
Yeah, so I don't know where Bullinger.
So Bullinger teaches that. That's interesting.
Well, evidently he pulled it out of his hat. No, I'm sorry, he pulled it out of Theodore Herzl's hat.
Yeah, right.
He slept with him.
Yeah, so that would be universalistic. If you say, even if you don't believe me, you scribes and Pharisees, you Edomites.
Yeah, right.
You can still, if you change your mind and start believing in me, that's not the tenor of the first 28 verses of chapter 8, and nor is it the tenor of the verses afterwards. Okay, so let me reread verse 33. They answered him, we be Abraham's seed, and were never in bondage to any man. How say you, you shall be made free? So we are talking here, or they are saying, we be Abraham's seed. They're talking about themselves
right.
collectively.
And let's talk about the Hebrew mentality that, you know, I don't have too many specific examples of it right now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a mentality in the Hebrew Old Testament that, and this can be demonstrated, that if you were, if you're an Israelite, then you were in the loins of Isaac when he was sacrificed on the altar.
Right.
If you're an Israelite, then you were in the loins of your fathers when they were in bondage in Egypt.
That's right.
And you were in bondage with them.
Yeah, and in Babylon.
Absolutely.
Also. Yes.
And that is always, you know, that's very demonstrable throughout the Old Testament,
mm-hmm.
that they had that mentality.
Right.
And here these Pharisees suddenly lose that entire mentality.
Right. Right.
Or were they really never in bondage?
Right.
Evidently, to me, that there were many of the Judeans who believed him
mm-hmm.
that we see, you know, in verse 31.
Yes.
And in verse 33, they're not the ones arguing with them.
That's right. Well, it's obvious that Jews still have that mentality. A perfect example, maybe 6-7 years ago, I don't know what the on television, there was this sitcom that was about two gay men and a woman, and I can't remember the name of the sitcom, but you know the whole sitcom was to promote homosexuality. You know, that's all it was about.
Yeah, and, well, that's what the Jews do.
Right, but the woman in the sitcom, she was obviously Jewish. Okay, and I saw an interview with her, and the interviewer asked her, you know, a question, and she said, "Well, our people don't believe in that." Okay, well, she's Jewish. Okay, so she's definitely, you know, identifying herself as Jewish, and she has nothing to do with non-Jews. You know, she has this Jewish mentality of being a Jew, and that's the bottom line. You know, and these Pharisees have the same mentality. They're talking about their own people, their own seed, okay, which means offspring, which means people, which means descendants, okay? Now, so if their seed, if their people, if their ancestors were never in bondage, then they can't possibly be Israelites.
No, absolutely not.
Right. Well,
they
then if they're if they're not who Israelites, who are they?
And the Israelites were in bondage several times.
Yes.
And the Edomites were never in bondage.
Right.
And we know from history that, and from scripture elsewhere, that these people, there's a large percentage of Edomites among them.
That's right. That's right. And, of course, the Jews of today will deny it. You know, and this is why they define the Sephardic branch of Jewry as originating in Spain. Okay. Now I'm sure that the, you know, just like the Caucasians didn't originate in the Caucasian mountains, they came from the south of the Caucasian mountains. The Sephardic Jews had to come from somewhere too, right?
Well, I would say that if there was a district in Spain with a name, anything like Sephard, or
right.
Sephard or Sephardain,
yes.
then that must have come from the Jews.
Right.
Because I don't know about medieval Spain, but I know about everything that Strabo wrote about ancient Spain,
mm-hmm.
and Strabo and the other historians, and Procopius and all that, and they didn't mention any district of that name.
Yes.
But there were Jews there.
Yes.
I think if there was a district of that name in medieval Spain, it probably got the name because of the Jews and not the other way around.
Exactly, exactly. The Sephardic Jews, who got their name from the Sepharvaim, the Babylonians, in 2 Kings, that's where the Jews got their Sephardic name from. That's where it comes from. Okay. Of course, they don't want you to make the biblical connection between the Sepharvaim. That's why they stop in Spain. Okay.
Well, no, but that's who they are. There's Sepharvaim who were brought in there
yes.
from further east in Arabia
yeah.
by the Babylonians and,
yeah.
and the Assyrians.
Okay, so I see a commander says, I need to add some clarification here, the Maccabean era where the Edomites were absorbed into white Judah. That's when this began.
Well, right. The Edomites weren't the only ones that were absorbed into white Judah.
Right, the Samaritans.
Yeah. Yeah, all the Canaanites of the surrounding areas.
Yeah, but there was the Maccabeans, the Hasmoneans, the priesthood. There was always a group of Judahites and Benjaminites. Certainly in Benjamin, there was hardly any race mixing going on up there. That was fairly pure because it was a primarily farming territory. And we know the Jews don't farm. so they pretty much left that area alone, okay? But in the city of Jerusalem, that's where the race mixing was taking place, okay?
Well, like we talked about patterns in history before, I mean, look at today.
Yes.
How many Jews are out in rural Iowa?
None.
I'm sure you'll find a bunch of lawyers, lawyers in Des Moines.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but you won't find any in Podunk.
Right, right. And so, but even in Jerusalem, there were people who understood that race mixing was wrong and remained separate from the race mixers, okay? And the Book of Maccabees clearly tells us that the Maccabees themselves were constantly engaging in warfare against the Hellenizers and the Romanizers and against the Edomites and the Samaritans, okay? So that it's not true that all of Judea became race mixed.
Well, I can name at least a couple of New Yorkers that believe that race mixing is wrong.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, there are a few.
Yeah, so that's the exact history, and Book of Maccabees makes that very clear. Just read 1 and 2 Maccabees, and you'll get the idea of how seriously the Maccabeans were trying to maintain their racial purity and their religious traditions, okay? That's why the Apocrypha have been taken out of the Bible, because, folks, the King James Version included the Apocrypha.
Well, you know, Strabo makes a telling statement. Strabo says that in Judea you had Judeans and Samaritans and Edomians all mixed up.
Yes.
All mixed in together.
Right.
And the portion of that that's telling is that Strabo was able to identify all three. In other words, if they weren't trying to keep themselves separate, you wouldn't be able to distinguish them.
Right, exactly.
Is what I would say.
Yeah.
And Strabo's an outsider looking in.
Yes.
And if he can distinguish them,
right.
Well, then they can certainly distinguish themselves.
Right.
And amongst each other.
And the fact is that most outside historians didn't pay attention to those distinctions. Okay. And it's very good that Strabo did, because that confirms. And of course, Josephus confirms these.
Well, right, but Josephus does, but Strabo's a total outsider that corroborates
yes.
Josephus.
That's right.
And he mentions it not once, but twice.
Right.
And
right.
And that's in Book 16.
Yes.
Of his geography.
Yeah, and so the real history of the time that confirmed in 1 and 2 Maccabees, Josephus, Strabo, and many other places.
Right. Strabo wrote before, you know, he died circa 25 A.D.
Okay.
So he has no interest in Christianity or any axe to grind.
Right, yeah. He's,
against Jews.
He's neutral.
Right.
So that we have to understand that the true Judahites, even until, of course, in our discussion of the book of Luke, it's very obvious in the first three chapters of Luke that we have Judahites pitted against Edomites, the Herodians being the Edomites. Okay? And you get that very clearly in Luke, although that terminology is not used. But everybody in history understands, all Bible scholars know, that Herod was an Edomite.
Well, Josephus mentions four times.
Mm-hmm.
That Herod or his father, you know, one or the other, his parents,
yes,
were Edomites.
There's right.
Four different places in Antiquities and Wars,
yes,
where that is specifically, explicitly mentioned.
Yes, yes. So there's no excuse for you not knowing that. You know, but of course the Judeo-Christians aren't interested in history. neither are the Jews. The Jews are interested in distorting it.
Why would Paul say emphatically in Romans chapter 9 that he's only concerned for those of his flesh in Israel.
Right.
And goes on to compare Jacob and Esau.
Right.
Why does he make that statement and then compare Jacob and Esau?
Right, because he's verifying the verse 8:33 here.
Absolutely.
That's right.
It's an absolute historical verification.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
we have three witnesses,
yeah.
Josephus, Strabo, and Paul.
Yeah, and we in Identity are the only ones who make this very important distinction among the Judeans, that you have basically three categories. You have the pure-blooded Judahites, you have the mixed-blood Edomites, and you have the Benjaminites, who are also pure-blooded Israelites, living to the north of Judea. Okay, this is your basic composition of the land of Judea, and the Edomites were trying to insinuate themselves into the company of our people, primarily in Judah, not so much in Benjamin. Okay, this is how you have to understand the ethnic diversity of the time, okay? All right? Ethnic multiculturalism, that's what it is. It's bliss, right? Okay, continuing, verse 34. Jesus answered them, "Verily, verily, I say to you, whosoever commits sin is the servant of sin." No antinomianism here. Yes, we are still doing that today. Greg. Thank you. Yeah, Our people are still multiculturally mixing with the Edomites, and this is our downfall. Verse 35, "And the servant abides not in the house forever, but the son abides forever. If the son therefore shall make you free, you shall be free indeed." Now, of course, he's speaking these words to these Pharisees who cannot understand it. If there is a Judahite Pharisee among them, he would be understanding, and probably his head is spinning as he's hearing these words. Verse 37. I know that.
Well, before we proceed, I would really like to talk a bit about Judas Scepter.
Okay.
Before we go.
Oh, at this point here.
And, I think this is an apt point because it ties in with what Christ just said about being free.
Yes.
It ties in with the Edomite thing.
Yes.
And it ties in, you know, basically with. Indirectly with a lot of this chapter.
Okay.
And a lot of people confuse Judah's scepter.
Okay.
They think that Judah, you know, Judah having the scepter, Judah was going to rule over the whole world.
Right.
It doesn't say that anywhere in the Old Testament.
Right. Yes.
It says that Judah prevailed over his brethren.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Right.
And this is Jacob speaking to Judah, Genesis 49:8.
Okay.
"Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise.
Okay.
Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies."
Mm-hmm.
"Thy father's children," meaning, and Jacob's talking about himself when he says,
right,
"thy father shall bow down before thee." So the rest of Israel shall bow down before Judah.
Mm-hmm.
"Judah, yes, is a lion's whelp."
Right.
"From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? The scepter shall not and that's telling, because Judah's an old lion right now.
Mm-hmm.
And who shall rouse him up now?
Mm-hmm.
"The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver between his feet, until Shiloh comes."
Mm-hmm.
Now this scepter, Judah I'm going to read 1 Chronicles 5, 1 and 2. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but for as much as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel. And the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright, for Judah prevailed above his brethren,
mm-hmm.
and he became the chief ruler.
Right.
But the birthright was Joseph's.
Mm-hmm.
The scepter is Judah's, but not over Satan,
mm-hmm.
not over anybody else but his brethren.
Right.
His brethren shall bow before him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
David never ruled over the aliens. David prayed over and over again for deliverance from the aliens, from
right.
Yahweh.
Right.
He never ruled over Yahweh's enemies. He never ruled over the children of Satan, David. There were diverse times when he defeated them in battle.
Mm-hmm.
There were diverse times when, you know, Solomon had Canaanite slaves, but they're hardly all the children of Cain. The children of Cain are really in Edomia and in Babylonia
mm-hmm.
when Solomon had Canaanite slaves. The Canaanites were just a remnant of the children of Canaan and Cain.
Right.
So Judah, there's no promise that Judah's scepter would mean that Judah ruled over the other races.
Right.
Judah
no,
would
not.
Rule over the children of Israel, period.
Yeah.
So you know, we discussed in several 2 Seed Line programs earlier this year, Genesis 4:7, Cain had a promise from Yahweh that he would rule over Abel. Satan
yeah.
rules this world. Judah rules over his brethren. There's a big difference. And the Ephraim scepter people really screw that up.
Right.
But most people in identity do not make that distinction.
Right, right. Yeah, well, obviously there were times where Judah, in terms of the British Empire,
well, right, Roman Empire and the
right,
Parthians
exactly.
were Judah, the leaders of the Parthians. Judah had magnified himself above the whole world at certain times, but there's no promise that Judah would rule the world. That only comes through Christ.
Yes,
and Christ is the descendant of Judah, but. The promises to destroy the enemies are different. They're a different set of promises.
Yes.
They're not made to Judah. They're made through Yahweh himself, through Christ.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and you have to make a distinction between the scepter and the birthright. The birthright, simply, which goes through Ephraim, is simply the promise of an enormous number of descendants. And it is true that Britain and America are the children of Joseph. Okay. And you can see in the world today, America and Britain comprise the largest segment of the Israelite world, okay? And Ephraim was promised to be 10 times the size of Manasseh. So all of these prophecies are fulfilled only in our people Israel. They have nothing to do with the Jews whatsoever.
Right. And when you see Judah's scepter, you look at who's ruling over the children, who the dominant tribe is amongst the children of Israel, and
right.
you'll see Judah.
Right. Yeah, and so we know from the history of Phares and Zerah that Zerah was the prince of the scarlet thread. He migrated to Ireland, and that's why Ireland has that symbol of the hand with the red thread being tied around it, because they're of Zerah, Judah. And they're the originators of the Irish kings and queens who ruled over Dan and Gad and various other tribes that moved into that territory later. Yes. So, I mean, everything in history fits the Judah scepter theory and the Joseph birthright theory. You have to understand there's a difference between the scepter and the birthright.
Well, right, and it's the house of David that rules over Joseph.
Right.
And Scripture proves that out.
Yeah.
And Scripture proves out that,
right.
You could go to Zechariah and read that the house of David will no more vex the tribe of Judah. In other words, the house of David, it's basically its most preeminent position is the British throne, and
yeah.
it's ruling over Ephraim, and they're vexing Judah. Well, how is that happening? Because basically the tribe of Judah is found in Germany, and not all Germans are Judah, I can't buy that, and in Scotland and in Ireland, and they're not all Judah either, but you'll find a large
right.
Judah element settled in those regions.
A lot of people from Gad settled in Britain. It's very obvious. Very obvious. Gad.
Well, right. There's you can't take the way the lines
yeah.
are drawn on a modern map and
right.
say, well, these separate the tribes. They don't.
Right, right. But the essence of the Ephraim scepter theory is that Pharaoh's and Zerah could not have been purebred sons, but they in fact are. The Bible just verifies it over and over again, and that any attempt to denigrate Tamar and her sons, Pharaoh's and Zerah, are simply vain.
Well, you know, let me interject that Matthew clearly states that Judah came, that Christ came down through Judah, through Tamar.
Mm-hmm.
He mentions Pharaoh's and Zerah.
Right.
Luke clearly states that Judah came down through Judah. And Paul clearly states it. And the Revelation surely intones it. And that's four biblical witnesses. And if you do not believe that, then you have to reject the entire, you're left with Mark, basically,
mm-hmm.
out of the New Testament.
Okay.
You're basically left with Mark.
Yeah.
So that makes you an antichrist.
Right. Yeah, and that's the problem with the Joseph Scepter theory, is it has to throw out every possible statement made of Judah, because Judah is always confirmed as being of, of Israel, okay, a pure-blooded Israelite. Okay.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to talk about Judah Scepter, and it's important to make the distinction between Judah's promises that he would rule over his brethren,
right.
and the fact that Cain and the children of Satan actually do rule this world.
Yes.
Until the second advent of Christ, there's no doubt.
Yeah,
and they're two separate things in Scripture.
Right.
They're not to be confused.
Yeah, and we do not at all deny that Judah was a race mixer. He mixed his seed with the Canaanite woman.
Right. Well, you know, Jezebel was the wife of Ahab, the king of the northern ten tribes.
Right.
And she's singled out for being a race mixer explicitly in the Revelation.
Right.
And Judah is not.
Yeah, because the Ephraim, the descendants of Joseph were actually the primary race mixers of the Bible.
Yes,
later on. Okay. So, and the commander says we have all sinned, and we can't just, keep on accusing our ancestors of, being so horrible that none of their descendants could possibly be pure bloods. Of course, Onan, and who was the other guy besides Shelah? Aaron and Onan died. They were killed by Yahweh before they could impregnate Tamar. And Shelah was too young. Okay? That's what the Bible's telling us. Okay? It's very simple. Okay? All right, let's continue. Where were we? Verse 37. I know that you are Abraham's seed. Okay, again, we agree that Abraham's seed here are the Edomites. Okay, not the Judahites, but you seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. Okay, again, he's telling you that there's no place for the truth in their minds.
Now, let me say, I don't know how many people have heard this, but I know it's been around 100 times. Dan Gaiman swears that there are ancient manuscripts that say, I know that you say you are the offspring of Abraham. And
mm-hmm.
those words you say are not in any ancient manuscript.
Right, yeah.
Gaiman thinks he's doing God a favor by sticking those words in his mouth. And it's just, it's criminal.
Yeah, right. We don't need to make up things in order to make the Jews look bad.
Absolutely, right.
Right. But Fausto is bringing up a very good point about Tamar. Why don't you tell the audience what Tamar's situation was and why she played the harlot? Because this is very important, so that we do not besmirch her character.
Well, right. Tamar's a widow.
Yes.
And women in the ancient world had no means of living, okay, unless they wanted to turn to prostitution.
Right.
And there's no evidence that Tamar was ever a prostitute except for one occasion where she used it as a device to trick Judah. And she had that coming. Tamar used the guise of a prostitute to get what she had coming to her, because women in the ancient world had no means of living unless they had a son. A son was designed, was what a woman relied on when she grew old in order to gain sustenance.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and a woman without a son had no sustenance.
Right.
And had to live in poverty in the street and off the goodwill of others.
Right.
But which we know often, is no living at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because most others have no goodwill.
Right.
Well, right. Tamar had a son coming. The house of Judah owed Tamar a son.
Yes.
Because that, you know, those men were promised in marriage to her.
Right, right.
And Judah withheld his third son, Shelah, from Tamar purposely.
Well, so, yeah, but he was too young anyway.
Well, right, but he wouldn't have been too, you know, I mean, she could have waited 10 years or whatever.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Plausible.
Yeah, he told her to wait until he grows up. Exactly.
Now, but, Tamar is owed a living by Judah, or at least a son who would provide for her in her old age.
Right, he can't just throw her out.
Right, and he did, and basically she went, and you know, when her father dies, that inheritance falls to her brothers.
It doesn't fall to her. Right.
So she went, and she got what she had coming to her.
Right, which
and
is
she
an
had
a dowry, yes.
She had to use cunning to do it, but she did it, and Judah fessed up that,
yes,
she
was
more righteous than I.
Yes, yes.
In other words, he knew that he shortchanged her, and he admitted it.
That's right.
And she got what she had coming, and she got her sons.
Yeah.
And she raised her sons, and they took care of her in her old age. I mean, that's the pattern. Judah shortchanged that woman, and he owed her, and she had to go take. And she used his weakness to do it, and that was very, very shrewd of her. But she had to go take what she had coming.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And she was entitled to every bit of it.
Yeah, now, yes, she was totally entitled, and it, you know, there's no, we cannot besmirch her for the fact that she did this, because she was, otherwise she was cast out into poverty, had no means of support. And so this is why she did it. And so, yeah, well, it was cunning of her to do that, but, you know, it was because Judah was not treating her right. That's why.
Right.
He didn't treat her right in any single way.
He cast her aside.
That's right.
And after, you know, spoiling her chance of having a family, he cast her aside.
And this story is still true today. How many women are forced into prostitution because they have no other means of support? You know, of course, today it's more acceptable, especially if you live in Las Vegas, L.A., you know, New York and Chicago, all right? But, you know, that's what a lot of women found themselves in, the position they found themselves in. So, you know, we cannot, you know, besmirch her character because she made that decision. Okay. So let's continue here. Okay. Let me repeat verse 7. I know that you are Abraham's seed, but you seek to kill me. You Pharisees, not Romans, folks. You Pharisees, you Edomite Pharisees, seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. Verse 38. I speak that which I have seen with my father, and you do that which you have seen with your father.
And that's a very explicit statement.
That's right.
That can't be, you know, he would be a diabolos if they had the same father. Christ would be a false accuser.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people like to, you know, to put that in modern vernacular and say he wasn't talking smack. Well, which really isn't in my vocabulary.
Yeah.
Well, believe it or not, he can't. It would be a totally false accusation if that wasn't a factual statement that his father and their father were two different people.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, again, two seed line.
Absolutely.
That's right. It's two seed line, and we hear more of this talk. Verse 39. They answered and said to him, "Abraham is our father." Well, through Esau. Yes.
And Paul explains in Galatians 3 and in Romans 9 that, Abraham's their father because they're Edomites. That's why he makes those comparisons.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's
which
right.
would make no sense. It would make no sense at all what he says in Galatians 3, 15 and 16.
Mm-hmm.
Or Romans chapter 9.
Yes.
If they weren't really Edomites.
Yes. Now, but then Jesus says to them, if you were really Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. But they don't, do they? They do the works of their father, which we'll get to here. Verse 40, but now you seek, you Pharisees, not Romans, folks, but now you seek to kill me, a man that has told you the truth, which I have heard of God, this did not Abraham. You do the deeds of your father, very explicit. Then said they to him, we be not born of fornication. We have one father, even God. Now,
this is the universalist claim that the Jews make today.
Mm-hmm.
that they're all yeah, you know, we're all from the same God.
Right.
It's Jewish universalism.
This is the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man.
Now, Christ is denying that we are not all, you know, Christ is asserting
yes.
that we are not all of the same father.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jews say we're all of the same father.
Right.
And mainstream Christians today, who do they follow?
Right.
The Jews.
The Jews.
It's incredible.
Right, right. Well, now, but here it's now in the English translation, it says, we be not born of fornication. Let's take that statement by itself.
We were not born of fornication.
Now, that would say that we are not race mixers, that we are not hybrids. We are of Abraham. They're making the claim, as I read this verse here, that they are pure-blooded descendants of Abraham.
Well, you know, the men by this time have tried to redefine already fornication
mm-hmm.
by trying to say that, you know, if you have sex outside of a marriage covenant.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, you know, and that's true today, and they mm-hmm. were doing it 2,000 years ago. There's no doubt.
Yes, right. And so, but of course, if that's what they mean by the statement, they're lying because they're not purebred. We know that they're part Edomite.
Well, right, and,
yes.
and they're moving
yes.
their lips, so we know they're lying.
They're moving their lips, and they're lying, okay? So they're just covering their butts. That's all they're doing here.
Right,
okay.
and verse 42 proves that they're lying.
Yeah, okay, so let's go to verse 42. Jesus said to them, if God were your father, if, okay? And that's a big if, folks. If God were your father, you would love me. For I proceeded forth and came from God, neither came I of myself, but he sent me. Why do you not understand my speech?
Now this, you know, Christians have a choice right here.
Yeah.
They could twist the meaning of the words, or they could literally take Christ true for what he's saying, that different races of people
right.
don't all come from God.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
And they would rather than face the truth, they would rather twist the meaning of the words.
Well, isn't it that what Genesis chapter 6 is all about? Genesis 6, 1 and 2, where the sons of God, the sons of Elohim, had sex with the daughters of Adam.
Right.
Okay?
And that's what, you know, that is problematical. It's difficult to understand because that should probably really say the sons of heaven.
Right.
As it does in
yeah.
in the Book of Enoch and in the Dead Sea Scrolls and in the Alexandrian version of the Septuagint.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But we know that it says very clearly that they bred giants.
Well, right. There's definitely a race mixing episode being described in Genesis 6, and many mainstream theologians, they admit that.
Right.
Of course, they deny it of Genesis chapter 3.
Right.
But they admit it of Genesis chapter 6.
And they deny that it means anything here in John 33 through 44.
Well, right. But there's a clear line.
Yes.
And it's a clear biblical historical line in the Old Testament from Cain. You could draw an
That's
arrow
right.
to Canaan. And from Canaan, you could draw an arrow to the Rephaim and the other people he mixed with.
Yes.
And right down to these Edomites of today and these
exactly.
Canaanites of today.
Living in the same territory the whole time. Exactly.
And it's all recorded in the Old Testament.
Okay, so verse 43 again. Why do you, scribes and Pharisees, not understand my speech, even because you cannot hear my word? Now, what's this word hear in the Greek? Because it must mean more like understand.
Well, to hear in Greek always could mean to understand.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, you know, it's always used in a sense of,
yeah.
it can mean to physically hear, but wherever the word is used in the New Testament,
yeah.
it quite often also means to understand.
So should understand have been a better choice for the
Greek? Well, definitely.
Okay.
And actually, admittedly, sometimes I translate it understand, but here I translated it hear.
Okay. All right. Verse 44. Now it gets very, that's very clear, folks. You are of your father, the devil, and the lusts of your father will you do.
Now there's a construction in Greek
mm-hmm.
that consists of the preposition ek,
ek
and
yes.
the usually the article and the noun.
Mm-hmm.
And that same construction is used in the genealogies, all
yeah.
throughout the genealogies,
okay, yes, yeah.
where the word son does not appear in Greek.
Okay, yeah.
And so, it means of people that you're a descendant of that named person.
It's the filial of, yes.
Yes, exactly. Yes. That's what it means. It doesn't mean anything else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for these people to be sons of a of their father, the false accuser,
mm-hmm.
or the Diabolos.
Yes.
And he was a murderer from the beginning.
Yes. Yes.
Well, they're the children of Cain. They have to be the children
right.
of Cain.
That's right. Okay. Well, now, why didn't he put the word Cain in here? But it should be obvious, shouldn't it? Who was the first murderer?
Cain.
Yes.
Right from the beginning.
That's right.
And
it should
he
be
was
obvious.
A murderer from the beginning.
Yeah, if
and
you don't
one,
know.
Yeah, 1 John 3:12 uses the same exact construction
uh-huh.
of, you know, of Cain being ek to Diablo or ecto
yes.
poneru, I
yes.
think, or the son of the evil one.
That's right. That's right.
So Cain is the son of the devil.
Yeah.
And that makes Cain a devil.
Yeah.
And these people here are the sons of Cain.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and there's no getting around that in Greek.
That's right.
You can't spiritualize that.
Yeah.
Cain
yeah.
didn't preach a gospel and pass it down. That these people aren't his spiritual disciples.
Mm-hmm.
They're his physical seed.
Right, right.
And there are many places in Scripture to show that also.
Right, yeah. And then, and many mainstream commentators, I believe, not Adam Clark, I can't think of Matthew Henry, I believe, was one, that agreed that this meant he was the son of the serpent. Okay, the serpent in Genesis 3.
Absolutely,
so, yeah.
It has to mean that.
That's right, that's what it means. Okay, so let me read the whole verse here. You are of your father the devil. This is the big one, folks. John 8:44. You are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father will you do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him, and neither in his genetics.
And in Genesis chapter 4, we see a race of Cain's descendants.
Mm-hmm.
Cain went off to another land and got himself a wife. And had a race of descendants called the Kenites.
Right.
And they appear again in Genesis chapter 15.
Yes.
Cohabiting with the Rephaim.
Yes.
Or the fallen angels.
The fallen angels, yes.
And the Canaanites.
Right. Right.
And several other races that, yeah. like the Girgashites, that have no descent in Genesis 10 from Adam.
Mm-hmm. Right. None of those.
You know, their origins are unclear.
That's right. They're probably those hybrids that the Rephaim.
Well, right. There's,
yes.
there's a lot of explanations for their origin.
Right.
But it's ambiguous in Scripture.
Yes, yes. But it's not ambiguous that they are part of the Cainite seed line, Edomite.
Oh, absolutely.
That are the very people that Yahweh instructed the Israelites to exterminate in Deuteronomy and Numbers and various places in the Old Testament, in Joshua and Exodus as well. Okay, very, very clear. And, of course, our modern...
Well, 1 Chronicles 2, I think it's the end of 1 Chronicles chapter 2, that the Kenites were the scribes in Jerusalem.
Right, they wormed their way in.
And who were the scribes in New York today, in Washington?
Yeah, right, exactly.
It's the same people.
Yeah,
the
because...
same situation.
In Numbers 33:55, Yahweh tells us that if we do not take his instructions to heart and exterminate all these Canaanites, they will be pricks in our eyes and thorns in our sides. And, of course, that's the rest is history. Okay? The rest is history, folks. But let me finish here. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. You never hear any Jew speaking the truth. The only time they speak the truth is to suck you into a lie.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, the kol nidre, that total abomination of a prayer in which they praise their father Satan, where they say their oaths are not oaths, their commitments are not commitments.
Right. They justify breaking all of their oaths and statements.
That's right.
And that prayer alone, that prayer alone, and I know you wrote a good paper on that, that prayer proves that no Christian should ever trust a Jew.
That's right. That's absolutely right. For he is a liar, whether it's Cain or the serpent, for he is a liar and the father of it. This is two seed line, folks. John 8:44 absolutely proves two seed lanterns, no doubt about it. Of
course, or Yahshua Christ becomes a diabolos, making false accusations.
Yeah, right. Either that, or
he's a liar. If he tells you your father is the devil, you better believe your father is the devil.
Either the Jews are lying or Yahshua is lying, folks.
Right, there's no doubt.
You got to pick. And, of course, the Judeo-Christians simply ignore.
They vote for the Jews every time.
Right. They totally ignore these passages. They totally ignore the Old Testament because they talk about, well, that's a hateful God.
Well, they say, well, it don't say that.
Yeah, right. Or
they don't want to read it, but it don't say that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why these New Testament Christians, they don't want to deal with the truth of the Old Testament, which is two seed line. Okay? That's how they deal with two seed line. They simply ignore the Old Testament. Right. Okay, verse 45. And because I tell you the truth, you believe me not. Which of you convinces me or convicts me of sin? And if I say the truth, why do you not believe me? He that is of God hears God's words. You, therefore, hear them not. So, folks, check out this logic here. Check out the logic. He that is of God hears God's words. Now, of, the filial ek, okay? You, therefore, hear them not because you are not of God.
Right. For this reason, you do not hear, because you are not from of Yahweh.
Okay? I mean, it can't be any clearer, folks, that he's telling these Jews that they are of the devil and they are not of Yahweh.
Anybody that thinks the Jews are the children of Yahweh or the children of God, they deny Christ. They become Antichrist.
Yeah, so can you imagine? Can you imagine? You know, how, I forget how it puts it now in the book of Revelation. It just flashed through my mind, but they, that if you are lukewarm, I will spew thee out of my mouth. But
right, woe to you who are neither, you know, that you are neither hot or cold.
Yeah,
And if you are lukewarm, I will spew you out of my mouth.
And so, because they're lukewarm about the scriptures, which are very, very clear in determining the difference between Judahites and Jews, as we, you know, and we're the ones who only understand. In identity, we're the only ones that have a clear understanding that the Jews derived from Edom, not from Judah, okay? And that they simply inserted this word Jew into the Old Testament in place of the word Judah in order to confuse us and trick us into believing that those Judahites were Jews, okay? That's how they tricked us. They simply insert words into the translations, okay? Then answered the Jews and said to him, "Say we not well that you are a Samaritan? And have a devil?" Okay.
And that word is demon there.
Okay.
Or a wicked spirit.
Right. An evil spirit. Yes. So the accusations between the Jews and Yahshua are flying, folks.
Well, that's a typical false accusation.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know, like troublemaker calls me a murderer when I back him into a corner.
Oh, well, yeah, we don't need to be calling each other names because the Jews are doing that for us. Yeah, right, right. So, and then Jesus answered, "I have not a devil, but I honor my Father, and you do dishonor me." Okay, folks, there's no love between Yahshua and these Pharisees at all. This is the hatred, the enmity, stemming from Genesis 3:15. There is simply no doubt about this. And everybody who denies the validity and the importance of Genesis 3:15 is simply denying the teachings of the Bible. Because it's very clear that, as you pointed out, the descent of the Canaanites through Cain and the Kenites.
And down to Esau and right down to this time.
Right, and to this very time today, we are still this enmity between the Edomites and the true Israelites is still fully in effect, folks. It's still, you can see it everywhere if you have eyes to see, okay? Verse 49 again, Jesus answered, "I have not a devil, but I honor my Father, and you do dishonor me. And I seek not my own glory." Of course, the Jews always seek their own glory. That's what they're all about. "There is one that seeks and judges." And that's Yahweh, folks. He's the one who judges. Verse 51, "Verily, verily, I say to you, if a man keep my saying, he shall never see death." Of course, the Pharisees don't believe this. Okay, verse 52. "Then said the Jews to him, now we know that you have a devil." Well, of course, if you keep on disagreeing with a Jew, they're going to start calling you names, right?
Right.
Isn't that how they operate, right? Abraham is dead, and the prophets. You say, if a man keep my saying, he shall never taste of death. Here again, they're showing us they don't believe in the afterlife, folks. The modern Jews today don't believe in the afterlife either. Verse 53, are you greater than our father Abraham? Again, they're lying about, you know, they're making this false claim that Abraham is their father.
Well, right, and they had that claim. It's. I mean, from their perspective, it's a legitimate claim because they don't make any racial distinction. Because
right.
Jews don't make any racial distinction.
Right.
And because they're descendants of Esau, they think that their claim is valid.
Yeah, and somehow the Ashkenazi Jews who don't have a drop of Shemitic blood in them somehow become Shemites too.
and that's why Paul stressed. And that's why Paul stressed in Galatians 3, 5, chapter 3, that their claim just was not valid.
That's right.
And the mainstream Christians, they...
Yeah. And they're vessels of destruction, which the Bible, the Old Testament says, is true of the Edomites.
And came from the same lump.
Right, right.
One vessel for mercy,
mm-hmm.
Jacob, and one vessel for destruction, Esau.
Esau, exactly. Verse 53, are you greater than our father Abraham, which is dead, and the prophets are dead? Who make you yourself? Well, are you saying that you're God and you can live forever? That's what they're asking him. Of course, they're being scornful here. They're mocking him. Verse 54, Jesus answered, if I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father that honors me, of whom you say that he is your God. Of course, he's denying their claim. Verse 55, yet you have not known him. But
now that's a very... Yeah, you know, that translation opens up to me the possibility that they might know him.
Okay.
And he just makes a flat statement in the present tense here, yet you do not know him.
Okay. Oh, so
in other words, there's no chance that they might, if you have not known him,
right.
You might get to know him. No, that's not what he's saying at all.
Okay. That's why they put it in the imperfect.
Right. And it's not an imperfect verb. Yet you do not know him, but I know him.
That's another distortion. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Verse 55, yet you do not know him. And, of course, that's with the tenor of all the previous verses anyway. But I know him, and if I should say I know him not, I shall be a liar like you are, like you Jews are. But I know him and keep his sayings. Verse 56, your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad. Now, why is the word your in here? Is he simply acknowledging that they're Edomites? Because Esau was, in fact, the grandson.
Well, yeah, they're Edomites. There's no doubt that they're children of Esau.
So verse 56 is simply a recapitulation of verse 33,
yes. And if any of the Judahites, even though it indicated that many among them believed him, if many among the Pharisees believed him in 831, if any of them are Judahites, then they deserve to still to be treated no better than Edomites.
Right.
Than the
right.
Edomites that they're following.
Yeah, because they made their pact with the devil. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Verse 57. Then said the Jews to him, and this is the correct translation now, because we're talking about Edomite Jews. We in Christian Identity, we two seedliners, we follow Bertrand Comparé and Dr. Wesley Swift in identifying the Jews as Edomites. And they had never used the word Jew without prefacing it without the word Edomite, the Edomite Jews. So we understand who we're talking about. Then said the Edomite Jews to him, you are not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham? Okay. So they're still mocking him. They're saying, who are you to say that you're eternal? Okay. Verse 58, Jesus said to them, verily, verily, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. So he is saying, I am eternal. Sorry, Jews, you don't get it, and you won't
get
it.
And the only way he could say that is to be Yahweh.
Okay.
Yahweh come in the flesh.
Okay, verse 59, then took they up stones. These are not Romans, folks. Then took they up stones to cast at him. But Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by. Well, we only have about 10 minutes left, so probably shouldn't go into chapter 10.
Right, and I have to make one quick apology. In 855, that word no is actually perfect.
Okay.
But I translated it in the present.
Okay.
Because the verb to know in the perfect can be translated in the present.
Okay.
If you either know something or
right.
you don't.
Yeah.
And if it was in the pluperfect, then you used to know it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's in the perfect, it's present.
Oh, okay. So
that's the way I read it.
So in other words, well, it's but the, even the way it's translated.
In other words, the knowledge is complete if it's in the perfect tense.
Yeah. But as you take this expression, yet you have not known him, he's simly, you never knew him. You never
oh,
knew
right.
that way.
But just it's
mm-hmm.
wording it like that, I would word it like that if it was in the imperfect.
Okay.
And it's not.
Okay.
And wording it like that, to me, would leave open the possibility
yeah,
that you could get to know
him. Yeah, I hear what you're
him.
Saying. Yeah, I never read it that way.
Yeah.
Because
well,
I know.
Right.
right.
But I'm just trying to
yeah.
indicate
oh.
that possibility is closed. And
right.
a lot of the grammar shows that it's closed.
Right. And those who preach that the Jews will be converted just before the judgment day will want to interpret it that way. Absolutely. You know, because that's the basis of the false idea of, you know, Messianic Judaism and Judeo-Christianity, Christian Zionism. Those deluded groups of people, they all teach, and including John Hagee, of course. And it's that the Jews will be converted, you know, and become Christians just before the second coming. That's what they all teach.
Well, you know something? It's not a mistake that here in John chapter 8, Yahshua Christ identifies the children of the devil.
Right.
And in John chapter 9, he opens the eyes of a man who was blind from birth.
Yes.
And in John chapter 10... he tells us who the sheep are.
Right.
And those sheep are the same sheep that were lost back there in Ezekiel 34.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
That would hear his voice.
Yeah.
And that's white Christendom.
Right.
Who heard his voice.
Yes.
And
yes.
it's white Christendom who, once they learn who the devil is, as he points out in John chapter 8,
mm-hmm.
then, since they were born blind at birth, will their eyes open.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And then at the same time that these Judeo-Christians teach that the Jews will be converting to Christianity just before the second coming, the Jews are continually denying it.
Right. Well, and there is no converting them. The
that's
Bible
right.
promises no. The Bible only
yeah.
promises a lake of fire for them, and it's not a cleansing fire.
Right.
That's not the Shekinah glory fire.
Yeah.
That's a lake of fire of destruction, because after the Jews go into it, so do hell and death.
Yeah, exactly.
And so hell and death don't need to be cleaned up.
So when do these Judeo-Christians believe the Jews? You know, it's their Judeo-Christian pastors who are claiming that the Jews will be converted.
Well, they don't read the book.
Yeah.
If they read the book, they'd realize,
yeah.
like we did at one time, that their pastors are lying to them.
That's right. That's right. But every time the Jews assert themselves on this issue, they say, no, we're not. We're not converting. We're Jews. We don't need a convert.
Well, you know, most people that do read the Bible, and I noticed this a long time ago, the Judeo-Christians that do read the Bible,
yes,
they get these little cute calendar books with these verse-a-day things, and
okay.
it skips them all around the book, and they read a nice sweet verse here and a nice sweet
verse. Verse a week.
Yeah, right, and they read all the nice fluffy stuff.
That's right. That's right.
And that's all they ever read. And so they get this idea because they've been following this cute little mm-hmm. calendar thingy that
yeah, that's
that
all
the whole
Bible about.
Is nothing but nice fluffy stuff.
Right, right. Yeah, and of course they're conditioned and they're trained not to really open their books, especially to the good stuff that we're talking about. You
well,
know.
Well, right. It's reality,
mm-hmm.
and if your religion and your reality are two different things, then you're not in tune with yourself.
Right.
You don't know what's going on in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, the problem that I have with the anti-seedliners is that they don't want to read the good stuff either. Okay? And they deny that the good stuff is there. You know, although I have to say that some anti-seedliners have admitted to me that they agree that the Messiah had to come through a pure seed line. They agree with that. Okay, and they also agree that the Jewish people are not part of that seed line. They are a different seed line. They agree with that. Okay, what they don't like to admit is that Eve had sex with one of those people.
Right, even
okay.
though right in front of their eyes today,
yeah.
there's 10 million Eves.
That's right.
Or maybe 100 million Eves.
Yeah, And so you have to ask the question of these anti-seedliners, do you approve of this race mixing? Do you think that the Jews are going to somehow be converted by race mixing with us? Or are we going to be converted to their religion by race mixing with them? And we can see with our own eyes what's going on, what's happening. That every time we try to convert them, they convert us to their religion, Judaism.
Absolutely, no
that's,
doubt.
That's what's happening in the world.
It's happening. Look at the Jesuits. It's happening on a large scale. I mean.
Yeah, and so, you know, whether it's the rapture theory or whether it's, this business dispensationalism, all of it's designed to catch the Christian off guard and catch him napping so that they can be tossed to the wolves. Okay? That's what as Jesus put it, as he said to the apostles, I send you out as sheep among wolves. Okay? And that's where we're at. We have to be therefore wise as serpents, yet gentle as doves. We have to understand who the enemy is.
Well,
serpent people.
Even in Luke chapter 10, which you just cited,
mm-hmm.
he said, I saw Satan fall from heaven.
Right.
And we have these fallen angels in the Old Testament and this race mixing episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then he says that I give you power to tread over serpents and scorpions.
Right.
In the next verse.
Mm-hmm.
And they are directly related to the Satan fallen from heaven on the previous verse.
Right. Right. Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
I mean, there's a direct connection there.
Yes.
And it's always struck me as very profound that in John 8 we learned about the devil, in John 10 we find out who the sheep are, and in John 9 somebody born blind
needs to wake up.
Well, right.
See. Yeah. Exactly.
If we believe John 8 and John 10, our eyes are open.
That's right. That's very good.
It's not a mistake that these chapters are like that.
Yes, yes. Okay, well, no, there is a purpose to this.
Absolutely. Well, it's the whole design of the book.
Right.
It's so perfect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's so profound. The whole design of this book is so profound.
Yeah.
And most people just never see it. And it's a shame.
Yes.
I know they're not supposed to see it, but it still disturbs me that they don't.
That's right. Well, of course, because it's so obvious for those of us who have eyes to see. It's so obvious what's happening, and that the enemy is the perfidious Jew, but the perfidious Jew has spent not just millions, not just billions, but trillions of dollars, by keeping us distracted away from the truth, by distorting our Bibles, hiring people like C.I. Schofield to write versions of the Bible which tell us that the Jews are Israel and we know they're not, et cetera, et cetera. They spend literally trillions of dollars and countless hours just in the business of deceiving us.
But all the average, you could even see this in the King James Version of the Bible.
That's right.
I mean, it's with all of its thousands and thousands of flaws.
Right.
You could see this.
Yes, yes. And the universalization of the language is a primary factor in the deception. Yes, and you pointed out a couple verses in John chapter 8, which is very hard to universalize.
Right.
Very hard to universalize. Okay. All right, Bill, thank you very much for joining me again this evening. Tomorrow we're going to be our in-between session between 2 Corinthians and Galatians. We're going to continue to talk about how the Jews use deceptive language to distort the epistles of Paul. Okay, we're going to be continuing on that theme. And then I'm going to take a break. Then Bill's going to take a break on those Saturday nights. So we're going to be alternating. And then after that, we'll get started on the book of Galatians. Okay?
Right.
And
I'm going to – I'm not going to be here Friday either.
Okay.
On that weekend.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, that's
I'm going
right. That's
to,
right.
I'm going to do the Christogenia Fellowship Forum, the Euro Fellowship Forum early on Thursday afternoon.
Okay.
And then I'm shooting right to Virginia. I'm out of here. And I'm not – I might get back in time to do my open forum on Monday.
Okay.
And if I am, then I'll schedule it from Virginia.
Yeah.
And it'll be on the front page of Christian.
Okay. Right. Okay. So, well, you can make that announcement then next weekend, what you think the plan is going to be. And then for that weekend, which is going to be 2 weeks from now, Greg Howard and I are going to do – Friday and Saturday, we're going to do the Book of Enoch, 2 Seed Line in the Book of Enoch. Okay, so that should be really good. And then now this Sunday, I'm going to do part two of my study on the Herodians and how the it must be understood that the Herods, the Antipaters, etc., were not Judahites. They were Edomites who had usurped the kingdom of Judah, taking it away from our people. And none of your mainstream churches teach this, and certainly not the Jews teach this, because they want you to believe that they are Israel and Judah, which they are not. Okay, so that's going to be the theme for Sunday. And so please join us tomorrow and Sunday for these shows. And I'm also going to be with Sword Brethren on his show at 5 o'clock Eastern as well. Okay, so thank you very much, Bill. Thank you all for listening. Praise Yahweh, and Yahweh bless everybody.
Praise Yahweh.